about to witness the awesome, crushing might of the show is called Knuckle Up, if you hadn't figured it out. And yeah, I'm rocking it. I am Eugene S. Robinson, your host. You're at Bloody Elbow. This is Knuckle Up. And apparently I'm doing this show from heaven. Or some extraterrestrial landscape. Given all the glowing. But wait. Wait. The lie we've all been waiting for. I'd like to report I've heard from Bob Riley as well. Bob Riley is the one who's singing what we're just about to hear. I'm taking a real good look at you. I'm taking a real good look at your face. So being payback and for always nothing. All right, all right. On the way to see the fights. On the way to see the fights. Hold on a second. There we go. And right now we're looking at Bigfoot Mir. I don't know, man. MMA is still on probation for me, you know? I'm hoping things work right. I'm hoping the vibe is right. I'm hoping that I can get over this malaise that has not only infected the mind of me and MMA fans for the past few weeks, but now has thoroughly come to fruition with the panicked rush of a press conference that was held this past week with the Fertittas and the Bald One. I'm willing to forget, man. I'm an active seeker. I'm actively seeking out some sort of surcease, some sort of comfort, some sort of respite, some sort of succor. I'm hoping to God to find it tonight. We'll be back. We're going to go watch it at the East Bay Rats. We're going to be back after the show. And all I can say is that I'm hoping it works out. That's all I can say. I don't want to be a downer a month running. Some of you are saying, month running, nothing, man. You've been a downer for 52 years. Yeah, well, that be it as it may. Let's hope for the best. I got my fingers crossed. We'll report unfailingly, true or false, truth or dare, good or bad, on what happened in the next few minutes. See you soon.
All right. We made it back. Just watched your show. Once again, proud owner. Yeah, You know what? I had to buy the shirt. Can you believe that? I had to buy the shirt. I had to buy it. I guess that's only fair since Kid Nate had to buy my fight book. There it is right behind me. Fight, everything you ever want to know about asking, but you're asking for asking. Anyway, we just saw, this is round number 377. It's 3 or 4 hours later from the intro. I'm a little bit worse for the wear. Yeah, and that was a meow of agreement, and we just watched the fight, and I have to say a few things. First of all, to the poster who said Eugene does know that the Daily Mail is a tabloid journal, right? So listen,
First of all, on issues of accuracy, you will find me being a bear. So I have to say, yes, I did know that. But did you know, if you had watched Kid Nate Show, you would know I've had extensive dealings with the National Enquirer over a couple of my past pieces. They were doing a piece on Anton LaVey, and they called me. They exhaustively if you're writing stuff about so-and-so getting caught with condoms in their mouths and back alleys, you might have to be really super rigorous about your approach to, you know, the legal side of life. So, if they say something like extraterrestrials make Twinkies, Twinkies could sue them. If they say extraterrestrials make snack food, that could be pure fabrication. But if it's connected to a human being, even if it's a so-called dead human being like Hitler, they might have actually fact-checked it somehow, some way, at the very least. Thank you very much. Cheers. This is the only show in which the host gets drunk while the show is in progress. Or, put another way, was drunk before the show started and continued to get drunk as the show goes on. Round 377, Eugene S. Robinson, the S standing for sauced. Except in the modern day UFC, sauced means very something very, very different. Sauced means, well, we know, performance-enhancing drugs. So, so yes, I do know the Daily Mail is a tabloid. It doesn't mean that Hitler, famous Nazi, got it in the first 3 minutes, that Hitler did not escape. Look, Spain under Franco, that war was well done. Look at Guernica. Franco, Spain was not a non-aligned nation. And Switzerland as a non-aligned nation is a freaking joke. They were the first ones to put J on the passports of their Jewish citizens. So don't give me that stuff. Swiss really believed that it was their extensive mountain fortifications that kept the Nazis from attacking them. Not that they had, they were Nazi bankers. So don't give me that crap, you know. And Spain, similarly, decided, you know, we're going to sit this one out because we got our own problems. However, I don't remember whether it was supposed to be Otto Skorzeny or who it was that flew Hitler out of Berlin into Spain and then from Spain by submarine. What do you think? You think on VE Day that all the Nazi subs just said, okay, came to the surface, flew a white flag, and looked forward to getting home to Hamburg? You think that's what happened? It's not what happened. You know? It's not what happened at all. And if there's anything at all that you ever read about Hitler or knew William Shirer's, you know, the rise and fall of the Third Reich, you know immediately that the psycho monograph of somebody like Hitler flies in the face of suicide. I had a guy I knew who killed his girlfriend. I know a few guys who killed their girlfriends. This guy's name was Gordon Kimbrough. You can look it up. GordonKimbrough. Gordon Kimbrough. He and I worked together on the worst movie of 1987, Leonard Part 6. Well, Kimbrough in his mid-20s, one of these relationships, he and his girlfriend get together, break up. Apparently, there was domestic abuse involved. He was a competitive bodybuilder. And, but he, as befitting somebody, tanked to the gills on PEDs. And I don't even have to say allegedly on this one, since I had occasion to purchase from him prior to the murder. His sexual lability, not liability, lability was like it is when you're fueled by steroids. In other words, he was not a goose gander guy, cheated a lot, didn't like the fact that his girlfriend would step out on him. And she didn't. But when she had enough, she goes, that's it, I'm done. Cheated on me too many times, I want to leave. And he talked her into coming over for one last talk, little knowing that it would actually be one last talk. You know, his defense was roid rage is what he used as his defense. He's now serving, I think, 25 to life in San Quentin prison. But he beat her, strangled her with an iron cord, stabbed her with a butter knife, beat her,
And when the police showed up, because some of the police were also bodybuilders and guys that we knew and were there and, you know, responded to the call. Just like if you train, you know, a lot of the guys that you train with probably are cops. They were the first ones on the scene. They said, you know, we showed up and Gordon was standing over her bloody, broken, and pretty clearly dead body at the time. And he had a syringe to his neck. And the syringe was filled with Lasix. I'll just cut to the chase for you because you guys probably are not knowing too much what Lasix is. L-A-S-I-X. It's a like an industrial power graded diuretic. Bodybuilders use it as part of the cutting cycle going up to a show. It literally flushes all the fluid from your body. Mohamed Benaziza, Momo, famous Egyptian bodybuilder, died back in the 80s. Just went crazy with the Lasix and his body literally burned up like running your car without oil in it. But he was standing there with a syringe in his neck. And I said, what was in the syringe? Was it Drano? Was it rat poison? Was it mercury? You know, something super fast acting that was just going to kill you like a gun would? And he said, no, we took it to the lab and it ends up being, it was Lasix. Which is sort of like trying to kill yourself with X-Lax, you know? You know, it's a long-lasting thing, which caused me to question, really, whether or not he was really committed to the prospect of killing himself. You take a guy whose whole life has been lived in the shadow of bodybuilding, body beautiful. It's not the psycho monograph of guys who end up killing themselves. Even though David Benoit, Chris Benoit, the professional wrestler who killed himself probably as a result of weird hormonal manipulations. My point is, long drawn out 6-minute point is that I don't think Hitler neither he nor Eva Braun fit the psycho monograph of somebody who was prone to kill themselves. You go, oh, what about Goebbels? And yeah, fine for those guys. Those guys would have been the first to say, you know what? But Hitler, no. So, Argentina didn't take other war criminals? Come on. Anyway, I'm glad in the first 10 minutes I could get into conspiracy theories, but that's not what this show is about. I was just responding to one of the posters saying that, you know, questioning whether or not I knew that the Daily Mail was a tabloid. In any case, in this round where we are, we're talking about one thing and one thing only, and that's very specifically my high flight, not only mine, our collective high flight state of fits of dudgeon, D-U-D-G-E-O-N, dudgeon, the last few weeks over this UFC adrift. The UFC adrift, which is like I said, your brain goes through the same mistake-making process, whether it's you actually making the mistakes or not, and it causes you a certain amount of agita. A certain kind of agita that wants you, you know, like an amoeba. You don't want to get close to this source of heat and light. You want to go further away from this source of heat and light. And that's the way, I don't know if you've been feeling this, but I've been feeling, which is very precisely why the rumor that sprung up midweek or early in the week, I can check when exactly, that Kat Zingano tested dirty was so expected, so not questioned, and whether it was, at one point, I know a guy who was telling me that he had killed a bunch of people. And somebody said, you know, Barry was, you know, he capped those guys. And I said, you know what? I read newspapers. I'm checking stuff out. I haven't seen that he's done. So, you know, after a certain point, whether a guy has or hasn't and is fabricating it, I think he's displayed a deeply unstable personality type here. So whether or not the UFC, whether or not Kat Zingano was really taking steroids or not, the rumor that hit earlier on in the week that she had gotten popped for a dirty drug. Now, keep in mind, this is a rumor, behind the scenes rumor that, you know, those in the know like to spread. You know, there were whispers that she was going to be dirty and that they were going to, you know, that this was going to be revealed and they were going to bump Holly Holmes up to fight Ronda at the last second to keep the fight intact. And they were going to... I mean, of course, if you've created an environment where anything could happen, people expect anything could happen. And at that point, we would all go, of course, why not? Why not? Why not? Because we are in the backseat of a car that is careening down a hill completely out of control. And if you don't think that they finally got the message in the UFC, I'd like to get, can somebody who works in the UFC, don't do this from your terminal at your desk, please. Could somebody at their terminal at the UFC send me a UFC org chart? Don't try to send it from your work computer. You will get in trouble. Send it to me at ox_B@hotmail.com. ox_BOW@hotmail.com. I want to see the UFC org chart. And not the bullshit. It's a publicly traded company. So not every whatever bullshit one you've shown people. The one that's on the wall at your cubicle. Because I'm really, yes, I understand that the talking heads at the press conference, you know, Lorenzo and Dana, and, you know, they're taking this very seriously. That I'm not concerned about who's taking what seriously now. I'm concerned about who was not doing what to get us to where we are now. You could say, well, it was a systemic collapse. I guess it was like the lottery or car accidents. Excuse me. That no, there was not real belief that anybody had that, well, you know, I might get tested, but even if I get popped, it's unlikely, but even if I get popped, then, well, you know, what? How many times do I want to fight this year anyway? You know, it's November. Man, I won't fight again until June anyway. Like I joked on Kid Nate's show. I said, I wonder at what point the UFC is going to have a position paper. It said, we listened to Knuckle Up last week. We listened to round 378. We have taken Eugene S. Robinson's point-by-point recommendations. And I guess there was some other guy. Who was it? I don't know if it was Josh Gross or some other writer who made very similar recommendations. And just give us credit for, it's got to be. It's got to be all testing all the time. Zero tolerance. And if you get popped, you're out. You know? And if you think this is going to create a secondary sub-league, like guys in the minor leagues in baseball who are beamed to the gills trying to get to the big show, so be it. But Bellator is fighting for the same ad dollars. They're fighting for the same partnerships. Whether the sport is clean or not is less important than what? It's less important than that it seem clean. Not because Budweiser gives a shit, but because you've got boxing guys saying to the reps at Budweiser, what, are you putting money into these drug monkeys? Dallas, let me tell you about that guy. Let me tell you, neither Dallas nor I give a shit about performance-enhancing drugs, steroids. I would even go as far to say I am an active supporter. Having consumed them, I can tell you they are a fantastic therapeutic addition. If your therapy is gaining 35, 40 pounds of pure muscle and a raging locomotive of athletic endeavor, then it's indicated. It's contraindicated if you want to be a fat ass who sits on the couch. In any case, we're talking about appearance and reality, and we're talking very specifically about what an organization has to do to be solvent. I told you last week the story about Sony and their drug testing. We're going to drug test. You know, Intel decided to have drug testing. Why? Intel at the time had to do drug testing because in the Reagan years, what they had said is like, look, if you're going to be a business that deals with the government, the government would like to think that we are not dealing with scofflaws and drug addicts. So if drug testing is good enough for the U.S. military, and if drug testing is good enough for the U.S., then it should be good enough for the contractors that work with. I don't think Andy Grove, the CEO of Intel at the time, the guy who I knew
personal knowledge of, but they gave a shit about whether people took drugs or not, as long as they got their work done. It's like that friend of mine who went to his boss and had this tearful moment when he told his boss he was addicted to crystal meth. And the first words out of his boss's mouth were, "Look, if money's a problem, I'll give you more money." The boss didn't give a shit that the guy was taking crystal meth. Did not give one crap. He liked the productivity. This guy's working 22 hours a day. Whatever. Hey, Jack, if you need money for the meth, you let me know. 22 hours a day. That's the kind of employee I want. So it's perception. It's reality. At one point, I was talking to that guy who I wrote about in the fight book who tried to sue me for being in the fight book and being compared to Billy Blanks. And I said, "Oh, man, why don't they get off it?" And he goes, and he kind of made an argument that's halfway to where I am now. He was like, he made some sort of garbled argument about kids, what kind of example. But what he didn't do is to turn the corner on that and get to where I am, which is to say, essentially, if you've got ample sports antagonists, business competitors who want to see you die every day, if you don't think if you don't think Bob Arum wakes up every day hoping that Dana White gets caught with like Huey Long used to say, "I'll be okay as long as I'm not caught with a live girl or a dead boy." No, or the other way around. As long as I'm not caught with a live boy or a dead girl, I'm fine. If you don't think Bob Arum is sitting around hoping that the bald one, Dana White, is not, I hope he wakes up. I had a friend who used to say, "You know what?" I said, "Man, that guy, I hate that guy. That guy, fuck it. He goes, "I tell you what, man, let's get a dead homeless person and put him in the guy's trunk." It's completely crazed, but I like the way he was thinking. You know, look, that guy's dead and he's homeless. It doesn't matter to him where he spends his last resting moments. Well, if he's dead, he is no longer has any more resting moments, but it's just garbage on the street. But this could be a silver lining for you if put in the correct guy's trunk. You hate your boss, put a dead homeless guy in his trunk. And who was it? Somebody else was upbraiding me in the comments section about how are you going to be MMA Journalist of the Year if you don't know. So, you know what? You know, save that stuff. And I think the guy was actually right, but you're missing the point on MMA Journalist of the Year. It's not so much that I deserve to be MMA Journalist of the Year. It has nothing to do with deserve, but the dearth of someone around who's won five times. Deserve. Look, let me tell you something. If there's anybody out there who deserves to win five times in a row or five times total or five times at all, I don't know who they are. Now, there's some who have won five times. That's okay. God love them. Good for you. Walk up, get your nice tux, get decent shoes, get your award, go home, put on your mantle, please. Peace, feel happy. I'm glad somebody thinks you deserve it. I don't. I mean, forget about MMA Journalist of the Year. I don't think we could. Baseball Journalist of the Year, Basketball Journalist of the Year. I don't think I could think of one person who deserves that designation in any sport. You would have to be the Jesus Christ of High Life. Or pick whatever sport, you know, the savior of soccer. I mean, you'd have to do something really amazing to win five awards. Has anybody won five MVPs? Guys who win five Super Bowl rings are noteworthy. But that, this is my Festivus rant. I don't want to go down that road. I do want to talk about UFC being adrift. They come out. They did the only thing they could do. And if people are saying, "Well, now the guys who get popped will just go and fight," nah. I think the UFC finally figured out they could solve two problems, one stone, because they're dealing with it on the athletic commission level. You know, so you think Bellator can come into Vegas and have a fight and not covered by a commission? That's what commissions are created for. Sports got to be cleaned up. And you know what? Guy, unlike sports like baseball or shit like that, or, you know, football, people are thinking like, man, why don't we get the all steroid league, man? Because these guys roided to the gills and these,
supermen just fight it out to death. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you that this sport, I mean, the ability now, the ability now, we lost our music. The ability now to have guys in there who are actually phenoms, real bona fide. I mean, on the one hand, you could say, look, performance enhancing drugs were about remaking yourself in a fashion that it actually is a better testament to the rising and advancing of the human spirit than if you take people who are naturally gifted. To take a guy who's 7'2" and to be amazed that he can dunk a basketball is foolish. To take a guy who is 5'2" and show him, you know, dunking a basketball is great. If there's some 5'2" guys who will never be able to do this. If they could do it by taking steroids, you're still going to see a percentage drop off of the guys who can do it. But there might be some guys with a proper application of science via performance-enhancing drugs could actually do the amazing. Instead, what we've traded that for are not guys who are, you know, not X-Men specifically, you know, some sort of genetically, not, it's not genetic mutation. We're just talking about biological mutation, TCA, the chemical advantage. We're not seeing that. But what we're seeing are guys who were super physically gifted, having chosen the right sport. You know, 7'2" guys are not jockeys, or if they are, they're not successful jockeys. 7'tall basketball players, that might work. Fighting is not similarly limited. You know what? Driving is inadvisable when you're drinking. Perhaps knuckle up is inadvisable when you're drinking. So anyway, so the UFC has done something. I know they feel like they've done it under duress. And I know the rest of you, like me, who are big fans of performance-enhancing drugs, maybe you're like, ah, man, this is a distraction. And initially, in the two shows where I was when I was distracted, I said, you know what? It's like I'm in a restaurant where the cook is fighting with the waiter, is fighting with the maitre d'. You know, it's chaos, and I don't like it. I come here to MMA very specifically because it shows with no gray shadings, with black and white and black and white and sharp relief. It shows exactly. It is anti-chaotic. From chaos comes order, and the order is after 15 minutes, a guy is gonna leave that cage being a loser, and another guy is gonna have his hand raised, or guy, girl, whatever. Okay, I mean, the same. This is a tincture of the feeling that we have with shitty decisions. And the fight tonight, we did see some shitty decisions. We did. Sorry. You know, the Brazilian nut jumpery, but of course, excuse me, they call it the upset special. My picks, I had a lot of don't cares on this fight. But we could just start at the top. With the underdog, Frank Mir was the underdog. What were you listening to those odd makers? I picked Mir won. Let's get that out of the way. Man, I'm feeling really, really sorry for, for Bigfoot. I'm a fan, but I did not see him doing this. And another underdog, Michael Johnson. I also picked him over Edson Barbosa. You should know that. Where I didn't do so well, I picked Alcantara. I always knew you would disappoint me. I always knew you would fail, but never quite so spectacularly. So outside of that, I had a lot of don't cares, but at the top of the card where it matters the most, I mattered the most. Now that we got that out of the way, let's go back to what we're talking about. Which is very specifically what the UFC had to do. This was, make no mistake at all, what happened this week, I cannot overstate the importance of what happened. It was tremendous. And I know there, you know, the nattering nabobs of negativity out there who are, oh, this doesn't mean there's still big. I agree with you. there could still be a two-class system, like F.R. Leavis and C.P. Snow said in their, well, C.P. Snow wrote the book Two Cultures. There could be two cultures here. You know? Yeah, we're testing everybody, but we're testing some people more seriously than others. Maybe. I don't know. I think when they started testing more seriously the first time, and you saw a whole tranche, a whole kind of level of guys who are around at 5 or 6 in the rankings, and maybe five to ten suddenly start to look different. These were the guys who were in the most delicate territory ever. These are guys who could seriously look at being out of the title contention through a mistake of magnitude that seems like, oh yeah, no such thing as bad press. Try again. Which brings us to UFC Fight Night. Something that Kid Nate and I could barely work up a care about. I mean, there were a lot of fights. There were a lot of fights on it that we didn't care about. However, I have to say there were a lot of people who delivered. If Ponzinibbio and Strickland pass their drug test, and I don't give a shit, I'm going to say that every fight now. Do not tell me. It's like, you know, if your girlfriend gets caught having anal sex in the garage of your house with members of your fight team 21 different times, as has happened in a fight team around here, it's not my fight team, you might have the right to say afterward, you know, trust but confirm. At this point, everything I say is probably pretty conditional until a test come back. So Ponzinibbio and Sean Strickland fought like their hair was on fire, fought just as strong the third round as he did the first round, altitude notwithstanding. Guys seem pretty fit and trim, pretty aggressive, in great shape. If they pass their drug test, I'd have to say that both of these guys have comfortably moved from don't care to care for me. Because at this point, if you've been watching the game enough, who is that guy? Lamont. Not from Sanford and Son, a Tour de France racer. You remember back in the days, you're like, Greg Lamont, he's great. I think that's his name. And then Lance Armstrong came along. You go, oh my God, Lance Armstrong. Man, that guy, Stretch Armstrong, Lance Armstrong, whatever. That guy is something. That might happen. But I'm just saying, looking at Strickland's, if they pass their drug test, I think you develop a sixth sense. I meet guys all the time who tell me, oh man, I'm going pro. It reminds me of that scene from that Ruben Blades movie called Crossover Dreams. I've mentioned this before, so you can't Donna Shalala me. You know, there are two types of Donna Shalala. Donna Shalala can only be used when I forget that I've told the story again. If I'm telling the story again as a contrapuntal point, if I'm using it as a leitmotif in the show that is Knuckle Up, then you can't Donna. If I'm telling you because I've forgotten and I'm acting like I don't think you've heard it before, then you can Donna Shalala me. But if I'm talking like last week when I was talking about the Metallica, I'm just making a point. Just like, you know, my conversation is full of articles. By which I mean a, and the. I use those a lot when I speak. The article. It's a figure of speech. However, Donna Shalala is to be used if I forget that I've told you a story. And you'll be able to tell a difference. So you know, you develop, if you've been watching this sport any time, you develop a sixth sense. Don't believe me? Tell me what you were thinking the first time you saw John Jones come into the cage against Bonner. Because I can tell you what I was thinking. My God, this skinny black kid's going to get killed. He's going to get murked. And after about the third Greco throw, I was like, oh my God. And I knew I was witnessing something that would change the sport. And that's what you look for, you know? I mean, latter-day GSP became kind of a boring fighter. But when GSP was on the upcome, it was great to see him out there thinking. And when he lost to Matt Hughes the first time around, you could see it was because he wasn't thinking the right things. The second time they fought, when he beat him, oh, he was thinking. He played Hughes like a Stradivarius. Hughes was like he was playing. Hughes was playing checkers. And suddenly, you got a guy whose head was just, my nose is above the water, and you got a guy who's sitting on a yacht. You know what? I'm going to fake a low kick. When he reaches down, I'll just switch it midair to the high kick. Oh, my God. It was an oh, my God moment. I didn't feel that watching Ponzinibbio with Sean Strickland, but I guess maybe it was there. Frankie Sands and Yuri Alcantara, you know, after seeing who got reamed, I thought Sean Strickland got reamed. I didn't think Sean Strickland lost that fight. But it was close enough for Brazilian UFC to have the Brazilian guy win it. But I think Frankie Sands, you know, he was a King of the Cage champion, right? Both of these guys, Strickland and Saints, I think that's how you pronounce his name, Saints, Sins. Both of these guys were King of the Cage. King of the Cage is just tough. Gladiator's Challenge, tough. These are tough fights. Tachi Palace, tough. Tough. Tough fights. And I think he saw, it was like, oh man, Strickland got reamed here. I better put some juice into it. And he beat unanimous decision. You know, good to see a wrestler get out there and actually advance his game. Wrestle mugging. It wasn't technically wrestle mugging, but it was kind of wrestle mugging. Rustam Khabilov. I picked him, and he lost. So I guess Khabilov screwed me, and Alcantara screwed me. So I'm 50%, I guess, but I did at the top of the card where it seems to make the most difference. I'm sorry, I forgot I was doing this show. So, yeah, how do you like that? This is the kind of thing I have to put up with. At some point, I mean, even Joe Rogan has a real studio. At some point, I'll have a real studio where I don't have the props falling on my head. Who am I going to sue when my prop falls on my head? Anyway, Khabilov was disappointing. I don't know what to tell you. He's 3-2 in the UFC. That moves you dangerously, perilously close to being a gicked. A guy I can't trust. To quote Ian Curtis, I put my trust in you. Sam Alvey, smiling Sam Alvey. Smiling Sam Alvey beat Cesar Ferreira. I'm sure we might want to pronounce it Ferreira. Pronounced for sheriff, knocked him out the first round. It was great. And I actually dug him, you know, I dug him because he was like trying not to be the Ultimate Fighter's Puck, you know, also known as Junie Browning. He's trying to stick around. So he's got the whole Smiling Sam and the t-shirts of Smiling Sam. But he jumped the shark with the Smiling Sam where he's like, he yanks the mic away from Anik and goes, I tell you, anybody who makes enough noise gets this shirt. You know what? Why don't you take that shirt and your pasty ass and get the fuck out of here? That's what the nation of Brazil said. The entire nation of Brazil said, you know, no, they liked the spirit. They seemed like they were cheering the guy on, even though he put to sleep a countryman of theirs. You know, I mean, they liked the kid's spirit. I like the smile. I like a little bit of his shtick. But Sam, could somebody send this to Sam Alvey? Just edit this part out. Just edit this part out, please. A little bit of that stuff goes a long way. It really does. It really does. It goes. Tito was made on the pistol bird thing, you know, where he's like firing 2 6-shooters and then they become the birds. That was it. I don't think he did. I think he did it against either Metzger or maybe he fought Metzger and Ken Shamrock was in the corner, but whatever. That's what the guy. That's what made the guy. You know, there could have been 10 guys after it was, Tito did the thing and then I could do the thing and then it's going to. And speaking of the thing, what is it? Come on. What is it with Yamasaki and the fingers and the, and then he even had a sweat stain on his shirt in the shape of the heart. So it must have been like he was putting his hands on his chest and he even got one of the ring girls to do it. She's leaving the cage and she's going like this. What? What? What is that? What is it? What the hell does that mean? Just stop. You have a heart. You love me. One love. You're in love with me. Am I having an affair with Mario Yamasaki? Is that what's happening? He's communicating to me like Neil Armstrong? What is it? What does this mean? Why is it happening? And why, what is the ring girl trying to, she also loves me or she loves Mario Yamasaki? And why does he have a stain on his shirt that's in the same shape as the heart? Stop it. Cut this out and send this to Yamasaki, please. You know? Secret, you know, Manson, Charles Manson did a whole thing on secret hand signals. I don't like it. You know, it means something, and I don't know what it means. Oh, you don't think it's annoying? You don't think it's nettlesome? How about I just start using words during the show that you don't know? Moreover, if you don't know them and you look them up in the dictionary, you can't figure out what they are. Snagaralistically. What did he say? You look it up. Snagaral. What the fuck is that? It's not even a real word. Not even a real word. The hell it's not. So anyway, you know, Sam Alvey's got his shtick. A little bit goes a long way, brother, man. You know, Michael Johnson and Barbosa. I picked Johnson. There's no way you're going to get a guy who's number 12 fighting a guy who's number 6 who really cares about doing what he's doing in this sport, who's going to say like, oh, well, I guess they expect me to lose, so I'll give them what they expect. Nah, get the fuck out of here. Get out of here. Johnson was like, you mean I'm fighting a guy who's number 6? And he knew. What do you say? You watch enough video on Edson Barbosa, you put the full court press on the guy, like Chardy says, touch him and he folds. Back that guy up, you know, is it a crime? Hey, maybe I could do the whole rest of the show with Chardy song titles. I mean, that would be the sweetest taboo, wouldn't it be? Sorry. Michael Johnson fought like his hair was on fire. It was great. It was great. It was great to see. It's nice to see the guy get to a winning streak of 4. He started talking a little crazy. You know, these guys always talk. You know, that's the thing. People always talk too much. I had a training partner, John Mossback, out in Ridgewood, Queens, when I used to train at the Olympia. He goes, I don't talk to humans. I go, who are you talking to? Are you talking to cats? He goes, cats make better conversation than most humans. Like, what are you talking about? He goes, most humans, all they do is complain. I go, you realize just saying that is a complaint. He goes, you're missing my point. You know, complaint is not conversation. I go, that's a complaint. He goes, right, and it's not conversation. Okay, I think I got you. Johnson was given the chance, took the chance, and now where's Barbosa? Barbosa is 8-0. Where is he in the UFC? Barbosa, I don't know what it is. Yeah, I know Johnson is 8-4 in the UFC. He had to have this fight. He knew he had to have this fight. He had to fight. And Barbosa couldn't think fast enough or plan fast enough. I guess Barbosa forgot he was Barbosa. He forgot that people could watch fights of Barbosa and learn something from the fights on Barbosa that they fought. You know, and those all those spinning kicks, those things were cool if you had never seen a Barbosa fight before. But I guarantee you, of all the people who are not going to be seeing an Edson Barbosa fight, the guy in the cage opposite you wasn't going to be one of those people who didn't see a Barbosa fight. So pack it up, pack it in, let him begin. That's a House of Pain. You got it. And then, of course, Mir and Bigfoot. I was shocked to see that Mir was the underdog. But, you know, I figured thusly. Bigfoot's got a really big head. It's a big target. Big jaw and a big target. And he might have successfully convinced... Mir that standing with him... That Mir could stand with him. And maybe he'd get a chance to knock Mir out, overpower him, put some of those size 11 mitts on him, however big his hands are. But I always figured that he wasn't gonna be beating Mir on the ground. You know, not at all. Surprise, surprise, Mir puts one on the dot, puts a man to sleep, and Mario Yamasaki, an inveterate Brazilian nut jumper, does what? Lets the dude take 8 shots. I count 8. Hoping Bigfoot would get up. Anybody who saw it could see the guy's not getting up from there, Jack. Why don't you double that number? Give him 16 shots to see if his... Now his head is bouncing off the canvas. What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for, Mr. Yamasaki? Are you trying to think if the hand thing is really working? Maybe I should... You know, if I painted my hands... Now, he had the black gloves on. So maybe if I could get a glove manufacturer to sponsorship, I could do white piping along the fingers so you could see the hand, the heart would be pulsating. It would be, that would really put me over the top. Nobody else that, look, you had some guys who had, let's get it on. That was noteworthy. The hand thing, not noteworthy. In fact, as referees go, nothing else has been noteworthy other than, let's get it on. The hand thing is just driving me crazy. And I don't have very far to go. So does this mean that Mir is back? I wanted them, most people talk too much, like John Moss back said. Where is Moss back? Last time I heard he had a food truck. Somebody let me know. John Moss back. M-A-A-S. B-A-C-H. The family had a restaurant in Ridgewood, Queens. I guess I could look it up. With his no complaint thing. Mir talked too much. He started talking crazy. Like, hey, I want everybody to know I'm back and I'm... Come on. You're going to get yourself hurt, Pops. Who are you going to fight? You're going to fight Junior Dos Santos? Like Ruben Blades said in Crossover Dreams, which I referenced earlier, and you'll notice I'm bringing it back. It's a recall. He said, you know, it's a rise and fall story. A guy who wants to cross over, a Latino guy, and he goes back to the neighborhood bar after he's fallen on hard times. And he said, and I've said this before, so you don't have to Donna Shalala. I know I've said it before. I'm using it to make a point. And he goes, hey, Johnny, what's happening? He goes, I'm going to go on tour again. The guy goes, on tour, really? The bartender says to him, he says, listen to me. He goes, you know where I think you should probably tour? My ass. I think you should probably tour my ass because that's all you're touring. And the guy goes, oh, I got it. You hate me too. Yeah, I was kind of an asshole before. So Mir starts doing crazy talk about, oh, I'm back. The division needs to know. Back. You're not back. You want to fight. There's a difference between getting on the bus and getting to where you're going. You got a token. You can get on the bus. Doesn't mean you got to your destination, Jack. You're not there yet. Easy on the crazy talk. The issue is not so much where Mir is, because Mir is Mir. I don't think anybody would describe him as a perennial crowd favorite. He is a name, though. But if you think he's going against Junior Dos Santos, lost battalionized Junior Dos Santos, who now suddenly seems relevant with Kane out again, which could only screw us up, it should be noted.
Verdum fights Dos Santos. If Verdum loses to Dos Santos, we have to suffer through a fourth engagement when Kane comes out again. Nobody needs to see this. Verdum has to beat Dos Santos. Verdum has to beat Santos for it to make any sense. You know, or I guess if Verdum loses to Santos, a depleted Verdum could fight Kane as Kane technically works his way back up. But presuming Kane can fight in 2015, which I can't remember what the word is on that, he's still a belt holder. He's not been stripped. They've just had guys fighting for the interim title, which a lot of people think is stupid, but whatever, you know. Anyway, so this is bringing to a close our show. I would like to say, I'm going to take the last few minutes of the show to do some housekeeping business. And the housekeeping business is, apparently, Show Karma is not as ironclad as we thought. Hector El Fajardo Matador lost a decision in the Salinas, cage fighting match. It has not slowed his time to pro at all. He's let us know he still intends to go through with that win or lose. It was a unanimous decision, but largely after having witnessed fights in Stockton and Central Valley, Central Coast, I've seen that, you know, I've seen guys get their arms raised up off the mat as winners. Pretty much, if the guy can't stand, I don't think he should be counted as a winner. Which means that, you know, Fajardo knew he had to put the guy away, couldn't do that. So then at that point, it becomes a judge's call, local judges, whatever. He lost the fight. So Show Karma is not ironclad. Also, I'm going to put a link up on the page that you'll find very interesting. Let me see if I can find it right now. I've got it up here. A German guy who has been studying, he says, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for 6 months. He has been studying Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for 6 months, and he's seen me play, not with Oxbow, but with a side project I have with Jamie Stewart from Juju in Salminio in Berlin about a year ago. And he got it into his head that he really wanted to see me fight. I had some plans to be in Europe in March and on tour with Buñuel, this Italian band. I had to cancel the tour, and so I'm not going to be over there in March. He seems to think it was a business trip, but whatever. It was a musical tour, but he's obsessed with fighting me. And I said, well, you know what? I'm fighting six this week. I'll have a 7-day. I've fought 7 days this past week, so I'm fighting all the time. I'll be glad to roll with you. You know, you want gi or no gi? He goes, I don't know. I guess either, but you know, I guess I'd like to have somebody take photos and document it. The guy is getting his PhD at some university in Germany, so he's finally decided that if the mountain can't go and come to Muhammad, Muhammad's going to go to the mountain. That he wants to. He's starting an Indiegogo campaign. Called, I'm reading it right now, Help Me Get My Ass Kicked by Eugene S. Robinson. And the amount of money he's asking for, 1,700 euros, will cover his airfare to and from Mountain View, California, San Francisco, I guess his bus to Mountain View, as well as his bus and back to his hotel in San Francisco and back to Germany at the conclusion of said fight. You know, this could go either way. It's like that time when I was doing a fighting Jake Shields for an article, and at the end of the fight, when Jake aggressively beat me, the photographer's boyfriend or assistant said to me, hey, you know, I'd like to roll with you a bit, Eugene, if you don't mind. And all the fighters in attendance were like, I was like, sure, Andrew, let's do it. And as I'm walking out to the mat, yeah, Donna Shalala, I know I told this before. I hear Jake whisper, barely loud enough for anybody to hear, but for me, he goes, you better win this. You don't get called out by a photographer's assistant in socks and skinny jeans and get tapped on this fucking mat in my school. No way. And I understood what it meant at that point. I lose a lot. I mean, I lose today for some reason at training. The only people who show up are like brown belts and black belts. Sound like a bad practical joke. I lose all the time.
But what happens, I decided as you move further up the chain, what happens is you move further up the chain, your willingness to tap to certain things just goes. Like, I almost tapped out a brown belt today. I know it's impolite to talk about it. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me talking about it. And he was like, no, you had that. That was tough. I was going out. I just chose to relax. And his relaxation caused a crisis of confidence that was significant enough where I go, I don't have this. I'm wasting my time here. And I let him go. Which is to say that Tobias, which is the guy's name, Rushvig, the guy could be sandbagging me. I don't know. He says 6 months, it could be 16 years. He says blue belt, it could be black belt. He says, I don't know this guy from Adam, but I do know he wants to fly to California to fight me. So I'm putting a link up. If you're interested, if you find this somehow compelling, I'm telling you right now, chip the money in. Chip it in. Help this guy get here. Because the big surprise is, once I beat him, I'm also going to rob him. So you know your money will be going to a good place. Me. Anyway, this is round number, what did I say? 377. Oh, let me check just to make sure. I'm a professional MMA guy who does not drink on the air at all. I'm just going to do the drunk MMA show. Maybe I could win that. Best drunk MMA journalist of the year. This is round number 377. I'm your host, Eugene S. Robinson. Check out Tobias's Indiegogo campaign to raise money so I can beat his head in. Or he says, kick his ass. I got better things to do with the ass, buddy. I'm going to kick your head in. And I have another. Actually, I have a bunch of links. I'm gonna put a link up to my Masters on the Mountain thing. That's coming up in April. If anybody's in Northern California and wants to make the roadie to Truckee, you can't drive with me, but I'll tell you where it is. Anyway, this is the show. I'm your host, Eugene S. Robinson. I'm in a little bit better mood. This is the best mood I've been in the past 3 weeks. Providing people continue maybe passing drug tests and the Kat Zingano Ronda thing comes up. That's it. All my hopes. I can't have anything bad happen with this fight. I'll be out until that May fight. Which means you're gonna have several weeks of me just like little Eazy-E said. Don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. You have a few weeks of that. Anyway, I'm Eugene S. Robinson. This is Knuckle Up. 377. See you next week. Look what you made me do!